So we're starting a new series, 5773, a new series on dating. And why do we date? We date to get married. Our series is going to be focused on the needs of Machon Meir. Our series are going to be focused on what a person who has gone through the tshuva process, a person who's dating in the Dati Lumi world, needs to know. And there are different social norms and different circles. You go to Australia, there are different norms than South Africa, which are different than Europe. And even within Europe, there are subcultures. And the United States, there are subcultures. And within different crowds, there are different norms. So we will cover certain norms, but you also have to speak to someone in the locale you're in to learn the norms of that locale. There are norms in different places. In some circles, if you don't show up to pick up the girl, that's considered impolite. In Jerusalem, in this area, it's very accepted that you meet the girl at the central bus station if she's coming from out of town, or in her neck of the woods if you're taking a bus. So there are different social norms, and sometimes it pays to ask the shadchan because the norms change. In some circles, it's perfectly normal to leave the girl a message and she should call you back. Not in the circles I deal with. In the circles I deal with, it's considered ungentlemanly. She should call you. You should always be calling her. You have to realize that everything we discuss has a basis, but there are going to be nuances that change with the different locales. So that's something to bear in mind, something to look into and speak to people, and you'll learn it as you go along. And sometimes I'll give you stories about how I actually did some research and tried to get what was right, and then the girl burst into tears and yelled at me that I was a brute, and how could I be so insensitive, in spite of the fact that I actually invested a lot of time trying to figure out what was the right way to go about breaking up with her. Say there, you try your best, and that's fine. You can't win them all. Everyone listening to this series will find 30% of it obvious. You're here for the other 70%. And the 70% is different for different people. For one guy, he needed to come in order to hear that the first dinner he's by his in-laws, he shouldn't take the spoon and take out some butter on it to put on his bread. For the next guy, he needed this class in order to hear that he has to take a shower before the date. And for the third guy, he needed this class in order to hear that he does not have to get on his knee in order to propose to his wife. The fifth guy needed this class in order to hear that you don't buy her alcoholic beverages on a date. You know, different guys need different things out of the class, and it's normal that 30% of it will seem obvious to you. But listen closely, because this most people find 70% is very important for them. Yeah?
Question regarding the alcoholic beverages, that's like a rule, or it's just like not a nice thing because it might be taken the wrong way?
There is a difference between a first date and a tenth date. There's a difference.
You only said the first date.
I didn't go into the details yet. I'm just giving an example. I'm saying as we go through it, you'll see. I'm saying there was a guy who came to Machon Meir, and then he went out on a date, and he said, "I don't get what I did wrong. I asked the girl if she wants to go to the beach, and she said no. I asked her if she minds if we pick a six-pack on the way, and she said no. So I'm looking at her, and I'm trying to understand what does she want us to do on this date. So that's when I learned that I also have to talk about six-packs on a date. So, we'll go through the points, and different people will get different things from the class. Let's begin. The first question is, why are we dating? So, people date for different reasons. Our assumption is you're dating for the sake of marriage. If you're dating for any other reason, then this class has nothing to do with you. I'm not going into where every person's holding religiously, but our class is focused on dating in that realm where a person is dating for the sake of marriage. If you are dating because you want a girlfriend, if you are dating because you want a girl in your life, if you're dating for any reason other than marriage, so then in all fairness, you have to make sure that both parties know what's going on here. I had just a week or two ago, I set up a guy who was he was relatively new to Judaism, and I didn't feel like I knew him, but I felt like I knew him to a degree, enough that I thought the match was really good, but I wasn't sure where he was holding. So I said to him, you know, I can't tell you whether it makes sense for you to date. Do me a favor, call the Rav from the country you came from and ask him. And if he says yes, fine. I don't know how to gauge. I don't know the answer to that question. So the girl was a smart girl, and she called me up after the first date, and she said, is he dating for a girlfriend or for marriage? Now, that's a very legitimate question. But I also asked him that question. So I had an answer. I said to him, you know, tell me, are you interested in getting married? Or at this stage of the game, you're looking for a girl in your life, but it's not about marriage. So I had an answer for her. Obviously, he was interested in dating. I'm just saying, in circumstances where a person has different things in mind, then that should be clear from the onset. It's not fair to the girl, because at least in the religious circles, what's understood is that you're dating for the sake of marriage. You're dating with the understanding that it will take 2 months, 4 months, maximum 6 months, but you're going to get engaged and get married. You're not going to have an engagement of a half a year or 8 months. No. Meaning if you're starting to date this girl today, the understanding is that in 6 to 8 months, you're going to be married. Assuming it'll take you 3 to 4 months to get engaged, and 3 to 4 months of an engagement period. Again, you want to take 5 months, no one's going to jump your back. Usually I insist on more dates than anyone else. That's usually the case with the guys who are serious about getting married. And we'll discuss that. The first question really after that, so we say, question number one is, why am I dating? What am I doing here? Question number two is, when should I start dating? When do we start dating? So, the average person, when he's 9, 10, or 11, starts being interested in girls. That's the norm of the way God created us. By 13, he should be interested in girls. That's the way a guy is. But that doesn't mean he should start dating then, right? So it's normal that he's interested in dating, but when does he start dating? So if we're dating for the sake of marriage, then we have to be ready for marriage. So people will say, what do I need for marriage? I need to be able to make enough money for us two to live. No. In order to be ready for marriage, you need to be stable. And stable means on many, many levels. Stable doesn't only mean financially, which is a separate question which we'll deal with much later. Stable means I know where I'm holding religiously. Told you guys the story about the woman who called me up? Yeah? She said she's learning, not in Machon Orah, a different institution. And she's very excited about Judaism. And she heard that I set people up. Could I please set her up with one of the people from Machon Meir? So I asked her where she's been. She says she underwent gear 3 months ago. I say, very nice. In which country? Whatever country. And where were you 6 months ago? I was in a Buddhist colony. Why were you in a Buddhist colony? Because a year and a half ago, I went to this Christian colony. And I spent a while there, and I decided that that's wrong. So I went to the Buddhist colony. And then I spent 6 months there. And then I decided that was wrong. And then I went to Judaism. So now I'm convinced this is the way to go. Could you set me up? So if this story weren't true, it would be a little funny. But the problem is, it's true. This is the phone call I get. I never met this woman. I didn't invite her for an interview, but I just told her that I don't think it's right for her to be dating yet, and I'm not about to set her up, and she should do whatever she wants. But if she has any teachers, she should consult with them and take a year or two to understand better the path that she's on before she starts dating. But one thing I learned in the last decade, it's that people have a very hard time gauging themselves. We had a student here at the Machon who went from keeping Shabbos to not keeping Shabbos, to deciding he wants to be Haredi and growing long payas, to not keeping Shabbos, to deciding he wants to be Hasidish, to not keeping Shabbos. And then he comes in and says he wants to start dating. So I asked him, what's the last stretch of Shomer Shabbos that you had? So he said, the last 6 weeks. So I said, that's very good, and kol hakavod, and I wish you continued success. Do you think you're at equilibrium to start dating? So he said, 100%. So I said, how? So he said, because if you connect the dots of my path, it's all, I see everything always moving in the same direction. I was always moving in the same direction. I had ups, I had downs, but I was always moving in the same direction. So one thing I've seen in the last decade, and that is that everyone thinks they're balanced. Even as people are going up and down, it's rare that people can look at themselves and say, hey, I'm in flux. Usually people look at themselves and say, I'm a work in progress. There was a young man I knew who he was engaged when I got to know him, and I hear him talking to his Kala on the phone, and he was madly in love with this girl. Like, I never saw a guy so in love with a girl. Madly in love. Like, she once left a hair. Like, he found a hair of hers in his suitcase. He hung it up over his bed, and he'd, like, worship it every morning. So I hear him talking to the girl, and he tells her, you know, when I took a break from my studies this afternoon, I researched something you asked me over Shabbos. And when he hangs up the phone, I said to him, you know, you slept till 1. What are you telling her in the break of your studies? You just got out of bed at 1. You weren't studying anything. So he says to me, I know. I said, yeah, but she doesn't know. He says, right. Seemed very weird to me. I wasn't dating yet. Then came the break, the Ben Azmanim break, and he cleans up the whole room. Now, he was the biggest slob I ever saw in my life, but he cleans up the whole room like crazy. And then he invites her to see his room, and it's immaculate condition. So I asked him, don't you think that you're being unfair to her? So he said, no. I said, why not? He said, we all have ups. We all have downs. I'm having a down, but I'll have an up. I said, yeah, but it's been a pretty long down. I know you now for a half year, a year. I don't remember the last time you got out of bed before 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Let's say, you know, it's a pretty long slump. So he said, okay, people have long slumps. We have ups, we have downs. So, they got married, and I tried to figure out if and how I could do something about it, and that's a part of the story we won't go into now. And they got divorced 2 months later, 3 months later, saying she found out very quickly that he was a faker and a liar. And you'd think, so the guy is a bum, right? But 3 years later, he got married to a top girl and partook in a yeshiva where he really got up for Vasikin every morning. And he had a family with her, 4 or 5 kids. And those of you who heard a series or 2 or 3 ago, or 4 ago, heard up to this part of the story. So I always wondered who was right. Maybe he was right. Maybe he wasn't a slump. Maybe she was impatient with him. But the continuation of the story is that he got divorced again. And last I saw of him, he was on a YouTube video playing a guitar in a shul, a conservative or reform shul, as he was singing the Hallel or something. I don't remember if it was on Yom Tov or... So there was a YouTube video which he unabashedly posted and considered me enough his friend to send it to me. So where is he? You look at a guy like that and you say, up, down, imbalance. And that imbalance carried through, and now there are casualties of that imbalance. 2 ex-wives, 4 or 5 children. So this question is the question that everyone wishes, no, move on. We came here to hear about dating, not about this. But the truth is that this is maybe the most pivotal question that people have to ask themselves, and it's very hard. How do you gauge if you're in equilibrium? This guy thought he was in equilibrium too. And this is where I recommend that you consult with external, and people external to yourself, they have a limited view of you, and that's why it's worth consulting with more than one. Those who have a Rebbe who know them for a long time and they feel it's worth hearing their opinion, so that's good. If you have a teacher, it doesn't have to be a Rebbe. That's fine. Sometimes a parent, even if they have different viewpoints, even if they have different religious orientation, they can sometimes be a sounding board and they can help you gauge yourself because they know you. Some parents are very biased in both directions. So then that's obviously that carries a weight. You have to know your own parents. But very often a parent, a sibling, even if they have a different religious or philosophical orientation, if they're honest enough, they can very often be a good gauge. I say that you have to ask yourself a few questions. None of you guys are taking notes. How are you going to remember all this? Okay. Question number one. What do you aspire to? You guys, were any of you here for the class 20, 10, 5, 3, half? Whenever I sit down with a guy, the Mahon, some of you, I did this with already. I say, where do you want to see yourself in 20 years, in 10 years, in 5 years, in 3 years, in 6 months? Now connect the dots. Does the 20, 10, 5, 3, 6 match? Do they show a consistent path? Where do you want to be? Where are you headed in life? Now, take that, and when you gauge equilibrium, ask yourself, where do I want to be in 20 years from now? A month ago, 6 months ago, have I had the same aspirations? Have I been consistent on that? 6 months ago, where did I want to be? 6 months ago, I was eating pork. I wanted to be at the hottest McDonald's in 20 years now. Now I want to be in a yeshiva or whatever. So then obviously I'm not yet ready. So question number one, aspirations. Where am I headed? That's a good way to gauge. Have I been consistent in my life's journey? Question number two, values. And this is a hard one. What do you value? What are your values? What's important to you? And has that been consistent for the last 6 months? I would rather say 2 years, but no one would listen to me. So we'll say 6 months. I would say a person should be consistent for 2 years in his value system, in his aspirations. But okay, let's say 6 months. Have your values been consistent? Priorities. Your priorities. You know, life is about priorities. Life is a series of compromises. Everything we do is compromises. You know, you never get everything you want. So, have your priorities been consistent? Now, I find very often that when people call me for a shidduch and I start asking them questions like, what are your priorities and what are your values, that people who aren't in a yeshiva setting are very taken aback. Like, I don't know what my values are. What are you talking about? Or, what do you mean, what are my priorities? What are my aspirations? I want to make money. I want to build a family. Okay, think for yourself for a minute. What are your aspirations in life? Where do you want to be in 20 years? There are a few other questions like this, but I think these are, if you really work on these are very good gauges of where you are. At the end of the day, these are the points you want to match with in your spouse. Your personality, I assume, didn't change too drastically in the last 6 months. Even in the tshuva process, usually our personality remains a constant. We just learn to adapt our personality, and we learn to hone our personality. But usually, normal people maintain a pretty stable personality. If you've undergone a very massive personality change, so then that counts too. You know, once you were very talkative, and then you made aliyah, you discovered you don't talk Hebrew, and you stopped talking, so that's not good. You know, a personality change is also a drastic change in a person's life, and that means he's out of equilibrium. So that's really question number one, which no one likes. Everyone wants us to move forward from this, and it's the most important question. When I first came to the Mahon, I went to Rav Bigon, and I said, how do we deal with getting the guys set up more, and how do we deal with getting the guys married? And he said to me, how do you deal with making sure they don't start dating before they're ready? He said, you're right, but you got to ask the question that comes before that. How do we ensure that? And ever since I came to the Mahon, so I've partook of hundreds of weddings. Yeah, every year I go to, I don't know, close to 100 weddings. How many divorces do you think I go to every year? Ask yourself that one. How many divorces?
20 divorces a year?
I don't know how many. I don't keep a count.
But would it be that high?
But I don't think there's a day that I'm not dealing with divorce to.
Wow.
Okay? So that should give you a little bit of perspective where the world's holding today. It's not a chokhmah to charge forward without stopping to think. You all have to get married, but you have to do it responsibly. You have to do it intelligently. People sometimes have this approach where they call it religion. They say, have faith, it'll work. What do you mean it'll work? We had a couple that made aliyah, and I called and I said, what are you guys doing? You didn't arrange an educational institution for your kids. You didn't arrange an apartment to rent. You didn't arrange parnasa. And they looked at me and they said, Rabbi, you're the rabbi. We have to tell you to have faith when you make aliyah. I said, you know, faith is a good thing, but there's some intelligence that doesn't hurt. Why not do a little bit of research? Find out where you're going to send your kids, where you're going to live. You can't come off the plane and start looking for an apartment to rent. You have kids to take care of. So people sometimes use this term faith as though it means be stupid and rely on God to make it work. It doesn't work that way. We're given intelligence, we got to use it. And the same is true here with the dating. We have a responsibility to do things intelligently. So take time to think about it. What your values, where you've been, where you're headed. Again, you'll hear the success stories, but do people tell you what happens behind the success stories? And how many failures there are? How many couples do we have where the man picked up and said, I can't do this? And the woman said, what do you mean? We have kids. What do you mean you can't do this? You married, you brought kids. You can't tell me today I don't feel like it. That's very nice. You don't feel like it. We dated. We went under an understanding. I don't think there's been a year that we haven't had such a story here where a guy finds himself saying, I'm not into it anymore. You know, religion was very exciting when I started, but now it's just not so exciting anymore. I have zero oomph to get up and go and daven in a minyan. Forget minyan. I don't want to put it on until in the morning. And the wife looks at him, and she's a FFB from birth, and she says, what are you talking about? We had an understanding. We got married with that understanding. What are you talking about? So I always say there has to be an ethical responsibility, not only a religious responsibility. You're dating a girl with certain understandings. You have to be responsible enough ethically to live up to those responsibilities. You have to be at equilibrium where you could take on those responsibilities. And those of you who have enough experience know that I fight for you as much as I fight for the girl. I fight for both sides. I think my job is to fight for you guys. But at the same time, that doesn't mean to allow the girl to fall prey to a situation which is not in her favor. I definitely fight for you guys. I don't know how many of you guys know stories about that, but that doesn't mean, you know, that doesn't mean at her expense. Things have to be fair. I want to mention one more thing before we start taking questions. I personally insist that every chozer b'tshuva and every chozeret b'tshuva get tested, test for STDs and a regular blood test to make sure you don't have hepatitis and other stuff. It's pretty much understood that a person who's a chozer b'tshuva has, unfortunately, a history that's, that leaves room to question, or at least to ensure that one doesn't have any of this. And I insist on both sides. Sometimes I'm the bad guy. There are chasanas I don't go to because the girl hates my guts because I insist that she gets tested for this. So some things you could throw on me. There are many bad things that I do, like insist that the girl gets tested for this. But I do it, I try to do it in a nice way, but that doesn't mean the girl takes it nicely. Doesn't matter. Like I said, I fight for you guys, but I'll also fight for the girl. And the flip side is I'll also insist that the guys here do it. And I think that's the responsible thing to do. Don't bury your head in the sand. My recommendation is do it now already. But that's the responsible way to approach it. And I think we have to be responsible to ourselves, to our spouses, to our kids. It's part of what we're discussing now. You're entering something that involves responsibility.
What if the girl is FFB? She needs to also get tested?
We'll talk. Yeah. We'll talk. But there are other guys waiting. Yeah.
A couple of things, you know, because first of all, the example you gave about the one that was in the Buddhist ashram and then, you know, before that Christianity. You did say that she was a heiress, assuming it was a kosher Orthodox.
I didn't go into that. I don't even know.
I'm saying then you're not talking 3 months, judging by things here. You're talking about at least
that's
Europe.
Why I asked what country.
Yeah. Okay. But the other thing, which is...
And between you and me, I don't understand who did her gear.
Okay.
I really didn't understand who did her gear.
I
don't remember what country it was in, but...
But I guess the more pressing in this question of equilibrium, I think there's always a big gray area for many people. The guy that you mentioned at first, the Slav, obviously that first marriage was totally under false pretenses, it seemed, because you knew him, and in 2 months she was wise with. But the next one, with this fine girl, 3-4 years, a bunch of kids, you know, I mean, there's this is the, can you go back and then say, maybe he, that wasn't such a big mistake. I don't know. But, and especially in the Orthodox world, where the mores of, you know, dating and physical relations are so different, the idea of somebody isn't at this level of equilibrium, what does he do? I'm not going to get married. I'm not going to date. I mean, you know, in other words, he's going to, if he thinks like this guy that you described, maybe, or many people, that I have worked on myself, I certainly can deal with values and this and that, but, you know, I may have some issues, and I'll talk to the woman about it. But to not date when you don't have this friends with benefits out, you know, whatever it is that exists in the secular world, I mean, it seems almost unrealistic. Does anyone to speak of say, you know, I really don't have this equilibrium, so I think I'll just stay single because I'm not really at the level that I should be to pull off a marriage trigger? It doesn't seem realistic.
Okay, so let me tell you another story. The same character came and gave me a responsa he wrote. He started putting together a book of responsa. So I said to him, tell me, which masechta did you finish in your life? He's writing responsa that he wants to publish. I asked him, and I asked innocently. Meaning when I asked it, he was asking me to learn Chavrusa. So I said, let's take a tractate that you finished already that we can review the whole tractate together. And he blushed. I didn't mean to put him on the spot. I didn't realize that there was no tractate in Shas that he finished. So the guy is writing responsa and he thinks he's worthy of writing a responsa, but he hasn't finished a single tractate. So I think that the reason a person doesn't reach equilibrium is because they're not willing to face themselves. For some people, reaching equilibrium is just a matter of consistency and time. Other people will need more help. I can tell you a few people I know who were in hospitals for the mentally ill. You're talking about people running around naked declaring they're the Mashiach. And they're happily married today. And it's not only one. It's a few. So I'm saying even situations which are extreme, when you have a person that's willing to work and really work and reach equilibrium, a person can. The psychological and the psychiatric world today has a lot to offer. Once upon a time, a guy like this, he had nothing to offer him. Today, I'm telling you, I've been to more than one wedding where I visited the guy at the mental institution, there was a couple that I taught their son. They were already marrying off kids. You know where they met? At Bellevue. The couple met. They were both mentally ill. They met in the mental hospital, and they got married, and they built a beautiful family. I won't tell you that the house wasn't a wreck. So what? But they brought up beautiful kids. And they both found jobs that they could make work, and they had excellent social workers, and they had parents who cared, and they made it work. I taught their son. They had wonderful kids. They were able to put together. Somehow they pulled it together. Everything's doable if a person's really willing to deal with it in a true way. If a person's really, you know, willing to face up to, I need to work with it, and then really work with it, then they can. I'm saying this character, he wasn't willing to work with it. He was all about cover up. Right. Let her think I'm great. Let other people think I'm great. But let me not really build myself from within. Once a person is willing to work, I think that most people can reach equilibrium. It might not be the equilibrium they dream about. Meaning, we had a student here who kept thinking he's going to be Hasidish Rebbe. Okay, that was his dream. He's going to be a Hasidish Rebbe. He ended up not keeping Shabbos. He ended up, he died with a t-shirt that said, I love Christ on it. But that's because he was never willing to work consistently. And, you know, this is easier said than done. I can't judge anyone, but I'm saying this guy who ended up with a t-shirt that said, I love Christ on him, this guy, and you know what? He ended up also asking to be buried here in Israel. He didn't, you know, he wore that t-shirt, but he would call me. We would be in touch every year, Erev Rosh Hashanah, and Erev Yom Kippur, and Erev Pesach. We would be in touch. But you know, the sad part of the story is that he left behind the wife. Some saying, so who did he do any favors? You know, he would have been better off had he realized I got to work it out. So that's why I take the time for this, even though this isn't the part that people really want to hear, but it's the part people have to hear. Okay, so any other questions? Let's move forward. So how do we start? We're going to go dating. Okay, why am I dating? I want to get married. Why do I want to get married? So I'm going to tell you the answer the Shadchanim don't want to hear. Everyone wants to get married for one reason. Everyone wants to get married because we all have hormones. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says it's not nice to talk about it, but everyone knows that Hashem created us, that men are attracted to women and women are attracted to men. And that's the way the world runs. And if it weren't for that, we wouldn't get married. So that's not what we should tell the Shadchan. Shadchan asks you what you're looking for, and you say, well, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm looking for a girl with looks that are a 20. That's not going to get you anywhere. That's not what they want to hear. But there's nothing wrong with recognizing that is a big part of what's going on here. There is that part of it, which is how Hashem created us. You know, I do ask guys, when I interview people, I say, on a scale of 1 to 10, what are you looking for as far as looks? So some people tell me a 10, and some people say a 7, and some people say a 5. I never got a 6 or an 8. It's very interesting. It's very interesting. Okay, but at any rate, that's legitimate. I do not believe in looking at pictures before you date. I don't think it's real. I don't think there's anything to it. Sometimes you meet a girl and she's going to have an excellent sense of humor, and she's going to be so witty that her looks will take off in your eyes. And sometimes you meet a girl that on paper looks fantastic, and then she has a drabby sense of humor, and she's very dry, and all her looks go down the tubes. Looks, I think it's very wrong to look at a picture beforehand. Even when girls send me pictures, sometimes I won't look at it. If they insist, I ask my wife to look at it. Gamarno, I don't believe in it. I don't believe in it as a shadchan. I don't believe in it. When I was dating, I never agreed to look at a picture, and I never agree to show a picture, meaning I think it's wrong. I don't think it's a real reflection of anything. The same guy who just said 2 minutes ago that's an integral part of dating is also saying that I don't think the picture is what's going to tell you anything. We had a guy who studied here and flew out to Europe. I don't remember what he was doing there. Came back here and said, you know, I'm dating this girl. I think I should marry her, but I'm not sure if she looks good enough. So I said, what do you mean? Do you like her looks? He said, yeah. So I said, so why aren't you sure? He said, I don't know what anyone else thinks. I said, what do you mean? But you think she looks good enough. So he said, yeah. But what does everyone else think? I said, okay, bring up her picture on Facebook. He puts up her picture on Facebook, and I didn't even look. I said, she's gorgeous. What are you talking about? So the guy is all smiles, and he's ready to get married to her. Because now he knows that someone else thinks she's beautiful. Doesn't matter. I have to look at her. What difference does it make? So, that's what makes a difference, what someone else thinks. Some people will think she's nice. Some people will think she's not nice. Gamarnu. There's no... there's all kinds of stupid advice out there. I had a friend who was dating the girl that he wanted to marry. And then his parents said, she doesn't look good enough for you. So he broke up with her. And he left the country. And he calls me up and says, what do you think I should do? So I said, I don't think your parents have any right to tell you what looks are good for you or bad for you. I think if you think she's fine and you like her personality, so what do you care what your parents think? So he says to me, no, I want you to go meet her. I said, what am I going to say? You like her? You guys, everything matches? Your parents' whole claim against her is that she doesn't look good enough for you? So marry her. So he says, no, I want to hear your opinion after you met her. Said, okay, fine. So we set up a meeting. I go up, I meet her for 3 minutes. And I come back home, and he calls me up. He says, what'd you think? I said, for a meeting of 3 minutes, I got to say, she seems very nice. I don't know what you want. What can I say after 3 minutes? But for 3 minutes, she was very nice. I don't know. I don't see any reason you shouldn't marry her. Out of 3 minutes. Look, I'm not telling you. I don't know the girl after 3 minutes, but They're happily married with kids today. You know, the guy just needed that push that someone else thought she was nice. So it's normal that we need external, you know, parents can really shake our self-confidence, and parents can sometimes say really stupid things. But we hope that most of the time parents aren't going to say really stupid things. So I do like it when parents are in the picture. I feel like they have your best interest at heart. We began with looks only because sometimes it's underrated. Sometimes shadchanim will get very upset at you. What are you talking to me about looks for? So don't talk to that shadchanim about looks. But at the end of the day, it is a part of the game. What's important is that she looks nice to you. I would add one more point. It's very common that a guy shows up to the date and the girl seems very nice and everything's great. except she's overweight or... or there's something else about her looks that bothers him. I've seen this so many times already, I don't even know which story to quote. But the stories all repeat themselves where basically you tell a guy, keep dating and see if after another 10, 15, 20 dates, if it still bothers you. And experience has shown that when you really like the person, so at least 50% of the time, and I'd say 85% of the time, the looks really don't bother you. Now, what happens is the looks keep getting better. You like the looks more and more as you like the person more and more.
Why does if, that happen?
That's the way we are. Meaning a person who's gorgeous, but we don't enjoy them, we don't enjoy conversation with them, so then their looks go down in our eyes. And when we like the person, when the conversation goes good and we find we resonate with one another and there's true understanding and there's camaraderie that develops, so then the looks look better.
It's like a psychological thing?
Yeah. There was a guy who, again, came in from Europe, dated a girl. He was in his mid-30s. She was in her mid-30s. And he comes back after the second date and he says, it's going good, but I don't think I'll ever get used to her looks. So I said, give it another 8 dates. Let's talk after date number 10. Now, the guy's working on fire, you know. He knows he's got to fly back to Europe. He's got a very short time frame to work with. He said, I don't care, it's going good. What are you going to break up for? For looks, it's not bad. You're just not sure you'll ever get used to it. Keep going, let's talk after 8 dates. Okay, shows up date number 10. It's going amazing. This is the best girl he's ever dated. He's got to fly back out to Europe. Okay, so now we got to start work, long distance dating. Lemaisa, they continue dating. And he comes back and tells me, you know, I think I'm ready to get engaged. So I said... Now, I wasn't going to remind him, so I said it very carefully. I said, okay, let's just go through the checklist. She's gorgeous, right? So he says to me, gorgeous? You kidding? What a stunning girl. And I didn't say a word. You know, I didn't even remind him of what he had said on date number 2. I don't think he remembers it today. And I was like keeping, you know, I had to hold myself back from bursting out laughing. I worded it that way, and the guy, you know, I didn't really have the checklist. I just wanted to make sure that point wasn't still a stick point. Because if you're up to date number 25, 30, and you still don't like her looks, so then you can't get married. Chazal said, you're not supposed to marry a girl you don't like her looks.
Why after that number?
I'm just saying, as the numbers go up, you see, if her looks are improving, if you feel comfortable with her looks, so fine. Then that's not an issue. But he hadn't mentioned it, so I had to make sure that he wasn't overlooking it. So he wasn't. He thought she looked great. Okay. So again, if this were one story, fine. But now that it's tens or hundreds of stories, this is just the way it works. Most of the time, you like the person, their looks go up in your eyes, and that's why you shouldn't rule out a date just because A or B or C bothers you. We do get used to things, and people do look better over time, that we enjoy the contact with them. Yes? Yeah?
I have 3 issues.
If it's on topic, because we're going in order, so we're going to cover a lot of issues. So if it's on topic, fine. If it's off topic, let's wait till we get there.
Well, I think it's on topic.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it's about physical appearance. So, like, I mean, a person's, like, dietary habits and, like, exercise habits can be reflected in their physical appearance. And I think it's important for two people to have similar habits. You know, if I only eat kale and my wife only eats, you know, hamburgers, then it's not going to work out very well. 6 foot.
Was that a question?
That was a question.
Okay, so let's discuss it on a more broad level. You're discussing do our dietary habits match, and I want to discuss a more broad discussion. So we have a guy in Switzerland and a girl in Jerusalem. How could they get married? We have a guy visiting from Denmark and a girl in Beit Shemesh. How can they date? How will they ever get married? We have a guy in Chicago and a girl in New York. Can they date? Will it work? All of these have worked. Okay? We had a guy from the Lower East Side visiting England for business. He was 35, she was 32. Some genius said to her, go date him. So they dated Sunday, and it went great. So they dated Sunday night, and it went great. So they dated Monday morning. And after his business meeting, they dated again Monday night. And they dated again Tuesday morning, and again Tuesday night. And by Wednesday morning, they thought they had it fixed. By Thursday, they were engaged. I wouldn't tell anyone else to do this. But they dated every morning and every night. And I was a guest in their house. They have a bunch of beautiful kids, and it's an amazing couple. He was an old bachelor, she was an old bachelorette. They were both serious about it, and it took off. Why am I bringing these stories? The guy in Denmark, the girl in Beit Shemesh, the guy in Switzerland, the girl in Jerusalem? Because I've seen people where he says, I have a job in the Golan. And she says, well, I have a job in the South. And they were not willing to date. You know, they date 20, 30 dates, and I say it's a perfect match, but we can't get married. I have my job, and I have my job. So they're both single till today, a decade and a half later. I think they're both idiots. Forgive me. If you're mature enough and old enough to get married, then you should be old enough to figure out how to overcome little obstacles like the fact that you have a job in the South and he has a job in the North. Make that work. I don't care if you're both CEOs. You got to figure out how to make that work. If you can't overcome that, then you're not ready to get married. So, you know the song, Jack Sprat could eat no fat, his wife could eat no lean, and so together when they ate, they'd lick the salad bowl clean, how'd it go? Whatever, something like that. They'd lick the table clean, whatever. Lemaise, so what if we have different dietary habits? We're going to have many things that are different. You know, so I don't think that can be an issue. I don't think anything like that can be an issue. On the contrary, if people view that as an issue, I don't see, I don't see how they can get married, because then there will be a million things like that. He likes sports and she doesn't. He likes the air conditioner on and she doesn't. Believe me, that's a much bigger issue. You want the windows open, she wants it closed. That's happening every night. There are a thousand issues. You know, I know a person who says you want to check if a shidduch's good. Then it must be that one of them likes it cold, another one likes it hot. Because we've yet to see a good shidduch where they both wanted the same thing. You know, so there are always going to be things like that. And about the diet, I could hear that if he's a vegetarian and she's a carnivore, so it's going to be a little hard. You know, she's into meat and he's into veggies. If they could be mutually respectful, if she could make him his veggies, if he could respect her meat-eating habits. I understand that if when she's sitting down to eat a steak on the date, he looks at her and says, is there a difference between that piece of meat and a human being? You know, I can understand that she'd have a hard time marrying a guy like that. Right, because he can't be respectful of her weight. But so long as it's something that you can respect the other person's approach, then I don't see why differences like that should make a difference. Again, you have a guy who's deeply into this stuff, so then we had a guy here who was all about workout. He set up a gym here. He set up a workout. He was a personal fitness trainer. So he once told me, I can't respect people who aren't fit. I started looking at my paunch. I said, oh boy. Okay. That was his thing. He couldn't respect anyone who wasn't fit. Okay. If you can't respect someone who's not like that, so then I understand that you can't match. But any other difference, she eats this, he eats that. Big deal. I don't see why that should make a difference. You have different diets. I don't see why that makes any difference. Unless it becomes a theology, you know. I can't accept people who are different. That's only, but other than that, and guys, you'd be surprised. I had a 35-year-old divorcee. with two kids. Calls me up, tells me exactly what he wants. And I set him up with a girl. And he calls me up after the first date and says, that was exactly right. Everything was perfect. I said, great, so you guys going out on another date? He said, no, of course not. I said, why not? He says, she's got an American accent. I said, yeah. He says, I can't marry a girl with an American accent. I need exactly a girl like that, just without the accent. Okay? You know, his odds as a divorcee with two kids. Well, he felt he wasn't given it. I said, you know, maybe give it another two dates and see if it can work. No, come on, you're kidding? An American accent? No, I can't do that. Okay, fine. What can I do? You know, fine. But, you know, we listen to his story and it sounds funny, but everyone has their little things, and that's why I recommend speak to someone. There was a girl who would only be set up with guys who had non-Jewish names. She wouldn't agree to go out with a guy with a name like Michael. No, that's not good. Michael sounds too Jewish. Give me a guy whose name is Christopher, that's okay. Jewish girl. Right. So her husband overdosed. Her husband died ODing, yeah. Okay, I'm not saying, you know, good guys with good Jewish names could also die that way, you know, fine. But I'm just saying, when that's your sole criterion, so then it, you know, sort of.
Wouldn't that send you an alarm bell if there's some...
I didn't set her up. Okay, say that. I'm just telling you. That was her criterion. He shouldn't look too Jewish, shouldn't sound Jewish. Now you're talking about a Shomer Shabbos girl. You're not talking about talking about a girl who's Shomer Shabbos. But that was what was important to her. Okay, what can I do? Fine, that's what she wants. But that's where a good friend and a good parent is supposed to help you realize, wait a second, are my criteria normal? Is this what's supposed to be important to me? And that's what we're going to try to cover in this series. Okay, so what should be my criteria? We said looks, don't forgo looks. It's important, but at the same time, give it time. Meaning you could have your perspective of what you like, and at the same time, you come to a date, and it's not exactly what you like, give it a chance. You'll see. If you like the girl, it could be that after a few dates, you'll see that it's perfectly fine. Other issues like dietary habits, I don't know. I don't see why that should make a difference. Let's touch on another point. Heksher. This is a biggie. The guys come here and then they decide, I only eat this and I only eat that. Why should you do that to yourself? But then the girl says, you want to take me out to Rabbanut restaurant? No. So go with her. If she only eats this, that, or the other thing, fine, you'll go with it. If it'll be the right shidduch and you match on everything else, so you'll compromise on that. Either you or she, we'll see. But you'll compromise on that, even though I always recommend that you guys should eat every heksher that's orthodox. But if the girl, you know, was, we had many guys are dating girls who said, I don't eat only rabbanut. Fine, respect that. If she ends up being your wife, that's a point you'll be able to compromise on. So you won't be able to go to as many restaurants? Fine. Whether the compromise will mean that you stop eating at those restaurants or the two of you don't eat at those restaurants, there's room to decide that later. I don't think that should be a stick point. Again, you have to check. Is your perspective on life the same? Is your perspective on religion, on kashrus, on other things the same? If everything else is the same, but she has this habit, they taught her in Honora or wherever, she had a Rebbe that said, no. From Jews, don't eat only Rabbanut. Fine, if that's what she was taught. So respect it. Move on with it. So that's why I think these things shouldn't be the big deal. Like dietary habits. Okay? Again, unless it's something which you can't respect otherwise. Okay. What else?
Well, let's say one of the partners is considered very good-looking. So
in general, we're looking for someone who is similar to ourselves. Meaning, in general, it is better that the partners are equals in as many areas as possible. That means that two people coming from different socioeconomic backgrounds, very often that poses an issue. I'll give you an example. If he comes from a house that's very wealthy, and she comes from a house that's not wealthy at all, so sometimes you have a situation where she's very into all kinds of things that don't matter to him. He doesn't care if the neighbors see him in a nice outfit or not a nice outfit. And she cares very much that the neighbors should always see that their car is brand new. Very often, because one side is going to come from a different socioeconomic background, that can cause a big bar between them. Is that a reason not to date a girl? Not necessarily, but it's something to think about. When it comes to looks, the same is true. It's healthier, it's beneficial, that they're both on the same plane as far as looks. Is that a reason not to date someone? No. Meaning if one party is better looking, I don't think that's a reason not to date. You ask me in general what works best, in general, the more the two are equal, the easier it is for things to flow. If one of them has a very, very pious lineage, you know, her father was a rabbi, her grandfather was a rabbi, her great-grandfather was a rabbi, and he's a farmer. So there's nothing wrong with it. But the question is, how will she view him? You know, will she always tell the kids, you know, but my side of the family, you guys have such lineage. Again, is it a big deal? No, but it's part of a broader spectrum. There are a lot of things which we say are preferences, but they shouldn't be breaking points. I mean, it's not that shouldn't be the reason not to date a girl. But you'll ask me, is it better if they're at the same place? Yes. As far as looks, as far as lineage, as far as wealth, as far as social status, the more things we have in common, the easier it is to build. Marriage is hard enough as it is. So the more we have in common, the easier it is. The Gemara says it's best to marry a girl from your own town, not only from your own city, not only from your own country. And that's why it's very often recommended that guys who make aliyah marry a girl at least from a family that made aliyah. You share the same background. You know, if you start talking to her about Yabba Dabba Doo and she has no idea what the Flintstones is, there's a part of you that she can't share. Right? So there's all kinds of little things that, you're going to tell her that's all folks. And she's going to say, folks? What's folks? You know, you know what? You all know what I'm talking about, but she doesn't know. Abadi, 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 right? But she doesn't know. She doesn't know what I'm saying.
You gave a lot of examples of just now about people who met from like halfway across the world.
Right? It's doable. I'm not saying this is a reason not to date a girl. We have every year. I think every year I'm here at the Mahon. We have an all American that marries a Yemenite, an all Yemenite. Okay, I think every year I'm here, this has happened. I don't know why. This really like takes up Yemenites and Americans. You see a lot of couples like that. Maybe I do know why, but okay, it's a different discussion. And inspired them in Americans, Moroccans and Americans, for some reason. What difference does it make? I was at a staff meeting today. And it shocked me because I thought I got used to this when I got to Merkaz Arav. And one of the rabbis takes his bread and puts it down on the table. Now, the table wasn't clean. Now, in Merkaz Arav, they used to do this all the time. The tables were mamash not clean. I didn't want to put my hands on them. And my Sephardi counterparts would all put their bread on the table. And I wouldn't even put my hands on the table. Like, if I touched the table, I'd go and wash my hands. I brought my own dish soap and scrub, and I would wash every dish before I'd actually take food, and I'd make sure to be the first one to take the food. Meaning I'd daven early, come to the meal first, take my bread first, take everything else that was being served first on the dishes that I personally washed. Okay, now imagine if I'm supposed to marry someone that brings me the food and puts it on the table. Doesn't exactly work, right? Different levels of aesthetics. Do I say that because of that you shouldn't marry someone? No. But that's a small example of something that's perspective. You know, you marry a Moroccan girl and at 5 o'clock in the morning she's washing all the floors and you're half up and you ask her, honey, what you doing? And she says, washing the floors. And you say, didn't you do that last night before we went to sleep? And she looks at you and you says, you bum, you ingrate, I don't understand, I'm trying to respect you, keep a clean house for you. That's all you can say? You're lying there in bed and you're wondering, this is respect, what did I do? I just asked her why it's necessary, you know. Different perspectives. Can you learn to respect it? Yes. But is it going to add certain work to the marriage? Also yes, and you won't know it in the dating. Meaning in the dating, in that sterile environment of the dating scene, so the girls are very, very nice and wonderful. You suddenly get to the house, and that's where you start seeing the social differences. And that's why it's recommended. that if you could find someone with a similar background to your own and a similar upbringing to your own, that helps a lot. Again, there are pros and cons to both, as we will discuss. Okay, let's take the last 2-3 minutes to discuss that. Guys often ask, should I date a girl who's from birth or not? So as much as I just said that a girl that has a shared background will have benefits, that you guys have shared experiences and you're on an equal plane, but there's a flip side to that. Because when you marry a girl who has roots in Israel, you gain a family in Israel. When you don't want to make Shabbos at home, you have where to go. When your wife gives birth, you have where to go. When you want to send your children to their grandparents, you don't have to worry that the TV's on Shabbos. You don't have to worry whether the food they're giving them is kosher. You don't have to worry whether the comments they're making are positive or negative about your lifestyle. There are limitless amounts of benefits to marrying a girl from a home that's firm from birth. And you can't even encompass them in a class. Be it the tunes that she knows, be it the norms that she has. There are limitless amounts of benefits. Do the benefits outweigh the costs? Depends on the person. It's very hard to say. Some people will feel threatened. Some people, the girl will lord it over them. And for some people, the benefits outweigh the costs. For some people, the costs outweigh the benefits. And some people can go either way. I can't give a blanket formula. There are advantages to marrying a from girl, birth girl. There are advantages to marrying a girl that was also chozer b'tshuva. One of the benefits is that when you have your downs, she understands them. She also has her downs. But that's, you understand, that's a benefit and a cost. Because that means that both of you can have downs. And who's going to pull the other one up? Right? So that's why each side has its benefits. And depending on the person, sometimes they have a recommendation, sometimes not. Meaning, for some guys, I'll say, I think you should go for a from birth girl. And for another guy, I'll say, I think you should ideally search for a girl that has a shared background with you. And for some guys, I say, you could go either way. And for some guys, I say, I don't know what you should do. So do whatever you think, you know, or go either way, whatever, I don't know. And again, these are only preferences. I wouldn't say that you should nix a good offer because of one or the other. If all things are equal and you have two girls being offered, so then for some guys, that's a preference to think about. But I don't think that's a reason to nix a good offer if everything else makes sense. So to summarize, what did we discuss today? We discussed the most important thing is to know why we're dating. And if you're dating for any other reason, then you got to figure out how to put that on the table. Number two, you have to know you have to date out of equilibrium. And we discussed that that's not so easy. So everyone thinks they're in equilibrium. Then we discussed that beauty is not something that's irrelevant. On the contrary, it's very relevant. And you have to be open about it. I don't believe in looking at pictures in advance. Sometimes a person is much, much better looking once you get to know them. And if the looks don't seem so great at the beginning, give it a little bit of time, because after 3, 5, 7 dates, you'll see if it's improving and it bothers you less, then it could be it won't bother you at all after 10 or 15 dates. You're not allowed to marry a girl that the looks bother you. That's not nice, it's wrong. Chazal say it's important that you feel comfortable with your wife's looks. What does feel comfortable mean? Different things for different people. We discussed that sometimes people nix a shidduch over small things, and that's silly. If you're ready to get married, that means you're ready to overcome small things. What are small things? Small things are things that you can respect the other person for being the way they are. And if I can respect it, so then we could figure out a way to work it out. And even when we're on different continents, we can make it work. We will discuss in the future internet dating, Skype dating, phone dating, long distance dating. We didn't touch on that yet. And then we ended now with a discussion about, what was the last thing we discussed?
Different cultural...
Right, different cultural backgrounds, where the ideal is that you find a girl that shares a cultural background with you, but that's not something to cause you to decline a good shidduch. It is an ideal and it's beneficial and helpful, but it shouldn't be a deal breaker. Any questions still here? Okay, so to be continued. Now, I have a question.